It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
When we had Medicare Part D, the private plans are receiving today significant subsidies because they can't compete with the government plans. And the reason they can't compete is the government isn't paying commissions, they're not paying advertising, they're not paying exorbitant executive salaries, and they're not trying to make a profit. About 98% of the Medicare and Medicaid dollars goes to the providers, goes to the hospital and the doctors. On the private sector, you'd be lucky to get 70 to 75%.
Congressman Bobby Scott, who represents South Richmond, East Henrico, Newport News, and Norfolk, spoke about the federal budget to constituents and answered their questions and concerns at a town hall meeting on April 13 at the Henrico Theater, and the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show was there. And you'll find out about Virginia's first-in-the-nation remedy for victims of identity theft in this week's News You Can Use. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 47, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR, 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. Identity theft is one of the fastest-growing crimes in the United States and makes up 37% of all fraud complaints nationwide. Virginia ranks 17th in the country in the total number of known victims of identity theft. But the Virginia Attorney General's office has a first-in-the-nation remedy for victims of identity theft. It's called the ID Theft Passport Program, which helps protect victims from arrest if someone committed a crime using their identity. The Identity Theft Passport is a card that you carry and present to law enforcement or other individuals who may challenge you about your identity should you become the victim of an identity crime. The passport is designed to serve as a shield to protect victims from unlawful detention or arrest for crimes committed by another under a stolen identity. An Identity Theft Passport is available to any Virginian who has filed a police report because they believe they are a victim of identity crime or have obtained a court order expunging their record as a result of an identity crime. For more information, call the Identity Theft Passport Program at 786-5284 or toll free at 1-800-370-0459. In other news, Virginia faces troubling trends in tackling poverty, and it's not just because of the current economic downturn. Over the past 20 years, the state has made no real progress in reducing poverty. It reaches only a fraction of children in poverty with public assistance, and the food stamp and TANF programs are not responsive to rising joblessness, according to a new report by the Commonwealth Institute for Fiscal Analysis released on May 7 at a poverty summit called by Virginia Governor Tim Kaine. The report notes that unemployment in the state has increased 122% since the start of the recession, but food stamp enrollment is up only 18%, and TANF has seen an increase of only 10%. Although 50,000 children are enrolled in TANF, more than 96,000 children live in extreme poverty, and 233,000 children live below the poverty level. The full report, Poverty in Our Time, includes specific recommendations for how to address these challenges and is available at www.thecommonwealthinstitute.org. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's legal term of the week is poor debtor's exemption. The poor debtor's exemption is a list of property that is automatically protected by state law from your creditors, even if they have a judgment. This includes $5,000 worth of household goods, $1,000 worth of clothing, all medically prescribed health aids, $10,000 worth of tools and equipment you need for work or school, and a motor vehicle worth up to $2,000. Unless you have expensive electronic equipment, jewelry, furs, other valuable items, or a car you own free and clear worth more than $2,000, your property cannot be taken to pay a judgment. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and poor debtor's exemption is this week's legal term of the week.
Since 1993, Congressman Bobby Scott has represented Virginia's 3rd Congressional District, which includes South Richmond, East Henrico, Newport News, and Norfolk. On April 13, Congressman Scott held a town hall meeting at the Henrico Theater, speaking about the federal budget to constituents and answering their questions and concerns. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show was there and brings you part one of a two-part presentation.
Representative Scott, I have a loaded question for you. You made the remark that we were spending Social Security. I want to know, what is it being spent on other than Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid?
We have, for the last 20, 30, 40 years, I'm not sure how far it's gone back, we've had what is called a unified budget. The Social Security taxes should be put in a separate, we derisively called during the 2000 election, a lockbox for Social Security. And in fact, that discussion and stay there for Social Security. Also, you got Medicare taxes. And so when the time comes to pay, then if we're bringing in more than we're paying out, we would have the money there at least till 2043. Unfortunately, with a unified budget, we count everything together. And if we're spending overall more than we're bringing in, what the Social Security Trust Fund ends up with are government IOUs. Now, the government's going to be good for them. The government isn't going to default on its IOUs, but the problem when you need the money in 2017, when you start paying out more than you're bringing in, are essentially, and just being honest, essentially the same whether the IOUs were there or not. You got to come up, because to come up with the money, you either have to borrow some more money or increase the taxes to come up with some cash to pay for it, which would essentially be the same question, same challenge you'd have whether the IOUs were there or not. It would not have been a problem, because we would have, when we were paying off the entire national debt by 2013, that included knocking out all the debt held by the public and putting all the money back in the trust funds. So we wouldn't have those problems, because you'd actually have live assets. But the what it was spent on, it's just part of the overall government deficit.
I apologize. I did not identify myself. My name is Bernice Newell. I live in the Holland Springs area, and I am a voter. And the reason I asked about the Social Security you're looking at an old railroader. And take you back a few years ago, Social Security borrowed money from railroad retirement. When time came to pay the interest and the money back, they could not do it. So they fused the two together. We paid into railroad retirement twice what people were paying into Social Security and was guaranteed 1.5 times. But of course, with the combination, we are not realizing our potential retirement. I say no more about it. The other thing I wish to say to you concerning the health care, I personally do not wish to see the health care all as one regular package. Then we begin to get into socialized medicine. I pay quite a bit of taxes to the federal government every year at 75 years old. I pay more than I did when I worked. That tax money goes to state hospitals and state programs for people that do not have and cannot afford health insurance. And I'm speaking primarily of MCV. And there are other places around in Richmond area that do take care of these people that cannot afford the health insurance. And that is the way I feel about the health insurance. And I'm just very strongly against it. And I think that it gets us too close to socialized medicine.
Well, I didn't understand. Are you for MCV being funded or against it?
I'm all for it. Mm-hmm. Our state taxes pay for it now. Let it continue to pay for it.
Okay. Well, one of the things about cost shifting is if everybody paid what they're paying now, if everybody was covered, you wouldn't be paying any more for health care than you're paying now. Because what happens when you go to, when your taxes are going to MCV, somebody without any money at all goes to MCV, they're essentially covered. We're covering everybody. It's just a stupid way to do it. Some people are being covered when they go to the hospital. If they'd had a doctor's visit, maybe they wouldn't be having heart attacks. You have some preventive care. But if you add up all of what we're paying now, we are paying more as a nation, more per capita, more as a percentage of GDP for health care than any nation on earth by far. And the result, the health care we're getting is nowhere close by any measure of outcome than other countries. Our life expectancy, there are many countries with higher life expectancies. There are many countries, I mean, we're an international embarrassment on infant mortality rate, which is, I mean, babies dying. Everybody in healthcare will tell you that that is a preventable event. Babies do not have to die before their first birthday. If you've got good health care, babies don't die. And in fact, that is a major, easily measured outcome to the quality of your health care. But in terms of all other kinds of measurable outcomes, we don't do as well. But if everybody had coverage, then MCV wouldn't need the subsidies. The other things wouldn't need the subsidies. So in terms of paying, getting everybody covered is one thing. You mentioned everything all in one. I think the direction we're going in right now to get everybody covered would be to have everybody have access to coverage. First thing you got to do is get the cost down to where people can actually afford it. But you have an array of options. I personally think that we would be better off with a single payer, Medicare for everybody. Now, that's controversial, and we're not getting there from here. I mean, you can't get there in one hop. But in terms of the array of choices, people being able to buy the equivalent of a Medicare card, or you can go and get Prudential, or you can go and get any other kind of coverage you've got, go get it. But as long as there are different options and there is a public plan out there, that can control the cost. My view is that the public plan doesn't have to be subsidized. As long as you're not subsidizing everybody else, you can set that at a cost that frankly will be very difficult for the private plans to compete with. When we had Medicare Part D, the private plans are receiving today significant subsidies because they can't compete with the government plans. And the reason they can't compete is the government isn't paying commissions, they're not paying advertising, they're not paying exorbitant executive salaries, and they're not trying to make a profit. About 98% of the Medicare and Medicaid dollars goes to the providers, goes to the hospital and the doctors. On the private sector, you'd be lucky to get 70 to 75% actually going to the doctors. The other 25%, as I said, goes to advertising, profits, commissions, exorbitant salaries, and everything else. So that it is, if we have a public plan out there, we'll be able to get the costs under control. But people will have a choice. There is no way that those of us who believe in a single-payer plan are going to get that enacted anytime in the foreseeable future. People will have choices of all kinds of different plans.
You're listening to Congressman Bobby Scott's April 13 town hall meeting at the Enrico Theater about the federal budget and his questions and answers with constituents. We'll be back in a moment. If you're just joining us, the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show now rejoins the April 13 town hall meeting at the Enrico Theater with Congressman Bobby Scott about the federal budget.
One of the good things that's happening now that we are trying to make sure we keep under control is the pension guarantee fund. If a company goes bankrupt and you had a pension that you were promised, the pension guarantee fund will make sure up to moderate income, make sure you get your pension. Now, if you're a high flyer and multimillionaire, then you know you'll be on your own. But for the average person, your pension will be covered. In a recession where a lot of companies are going bankrupt, people have retired and are absolutely defenseless, to have the company go bankrupt and decide and can't pay the pension, I think is unconscionable. And so the pension guarantee fund, unfortunately, is alive and well, and people are having to access it. One of the problems we're finding now is that there are a lot of companies whose pension is actually insolvent. They calculate how much money you need in the bank today to make sure you can pay all the promises, reasonably pay all the promises that you've made. Very few companies have fully funded pensions. A lot of them are in trouble and are kind of working their way back. It's not, if you're insolvent today, it's not a big deal as long as you're working towards solvency. And if you can get there in 10 years, you know, everybody will be all right. But you got to be working to it, because if you keep it at low solvency, someday people are not going to be paid. And the average company in this country is way underwater on their pension. The Education and Labor Committee is working to see how reasonably quickly companies can get on track. If you required them to fully fund their pensions overnight, they'd all be bankrupt. So you have to do it gradually, but that is one thing that we're working on.
And I have one comment to make. I'm not a very happy taxpayer. My taxes are going to bail out the companies that are being subsidized or bailed out, the CEOs. If I ran my household budget like the CEOs have run these businesses, I would be under the jail with the key thrown away. That's all I have to say.
I'm not sure that we did the right thing on that thing. I voted against it. I think there are a lot of cheaper ways that we could have dealt with the problem. And when you, in fact, if AIG and some of these other companies had just gone bankrupt, we'd have a lot of pieces to pick up. The pieces would have been a lot cheaper than the damage it's caused. A lot of this was, we're bailing people out of speculative, stupid investments, And if you want to gamble your investment money, that's fine. But, you know, we shouldn't be the ones picking up the pieces. Now, if somebody's about to lose their pension, you can deal with that. I heard one estimate that all these foreclosures and the money lost on foreclosures, you could solve that problem with about $250 billion. Why do we spend $700? You know, maybe a few billion here or there for pensions, but if you dealt with it, and we bailed out not only Americans, but bailed out all these foreign firms that were losing money, people speculative, people were betting on stuff that they didn't need to be betting on.
I also think quite often, because we have become a service-oriented country, we have very few factories in this country. So many of our companies have gone overseas, and then we import their goods. We, I think, need to try to entice these companies to come back to the United States, and this would help put our people back to work, and we would be able to collect taxes from our working people.
Well, let me just add to that, whether we do anything to entice them, I agree we ought to entice them, but the first thing we ought to do is stop giving them an incentive to move out. So the first thing we got to do is stop giving them incentive to move out.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Vicki Lightfoot. Live down the road. I got a couple of, well, one question, I guess. I listened to the 10 reasons, or the top reason, I should say, to support the budget. But my question is, what does this budget not do? In other words, what do we still have to live with? What are we still stuck with? Do we still have to pay high food prices, oil prices, and gas prices? In other words, does this budget adversely affect our everyday lives or enhances it?
Well, we'll just start on one, the energy prices. One of the investments we're making in alternative energy sources, so long as we are beholden to foreign oil, they can charge what they want when they feel like charging it. And we're just defenseless. When they want to charge $4 a gallon for gasoline, you just have to pay $4 a gallon gasoline. We need, if we had alternatives where Saudi Arabia didn't have total control over our energy, then you wouldn't have to be paying that. One of my major disappointments over the last, since I've been in Congress, I was elected in 1992, is we haven't really made any meaningful effort on alternative energy sources. I mean, last time you heard anything about somebody talk about geothermal energy was in the Carter administration. I mean, you got people here aren't even old enough to. I mean, you're talking history. Some of us are talking current events, but you know, I mean, we can do better. We can do better than that. And one of the exciting things about this budget is it includes significant investments in energy technology. The president wants to put $15 billion a year into research, figure out how we can do wind and solar and geothermal and waves or whatever else you can do. Use the technology so that we can use renewable energy. That will do a lot for the average person on energy prices.
You have been listening to Congressman Bobby Scott's April 13 town hall meeting at the Enrico Theater about the federal budget and his questions and answers with constituents. This is the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show.
This week's top three tips are about supplemental security income, or SSI. The first tip is that SSI is a federal program that pays monthly payments to aged, blind, and disabled people. The Social Security Administration runs the program. The second tip is that you must have low income and low resources. You don't need to have worked or paid Social Security taxes to get SSI. Because SSI is based on need, you must apply for all other benefits for which you might be eligible. The third tip is that SSI is like a welfare program and should not be confused with Social Security, which is like an insurance program. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King, and for this week, that's our top three tips.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m., and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. Also, if you have a question you would like answered or any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. Please include your name and phone number. You also can leave that same information before 8 a.m. or after 6 p.m. by calling 200-6045. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. The federal budget directly impacts the life of every American citizen and is more important than ever this year, which began with record budget deficits and record job losses. Join us next week with part two of Congressman Bobby Scott's April 13 town hall meeting at the Enrico Theater about the federal budget, featuring questions and answers with constituents. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.